And we even have music last night. Yeah, nice treat. So I'm going to give three or four lectures, which has to be discussed after wine reception. What I'm going to do anyway in these three, four lectures, probably I will simply try to describe the state of art of these related problems about Ginzburg-Landau vortex dynamics. So I hope to explain where we are and where we may go next. But I definitely not going to say why we are here and what we're going to do next, because these are much more subtle or difficult issues. So I'm going to leave to people here. So anyway, this is tricky, and I thought, yeah? Can you see okay? All right, so I will divide my lecture into four parts. First, I'm going to explain the static theory. Well, first of all, it's a sort of necessary step for understanding the dynamic. But I also try to put the Ginzburg-Landau or related equation somehow related to pure side of mathematics, which may relate to next workshop. Anyway, so at least I try to do that. The second part will be concerned not Ginzburg-Landau, but a related equation, Landau-Lipschitz equation on ferromagnets and anti-ferromagnets. And I'm interested here is how the magnet bubbles dynamics in these problems. Then the third part, I will discuss the hydrodynamics. Now that part is very much depend on the point of view you take. So I will try to explain some of the issues there. And if I have time, I will discuss some higher dimensional cases of the problem. Well, first of all, we use the word vortex very often. I believe probably the name first come up in classical fluid mechanics, such as Euler equation or Navier-Stokes equation. If you're not familiar with these equations, it's all right. But if you know, then you know what I'm talking about, right? But the vortex we're going to talk about is more topological solid things. These are particle-like solutions in, say, condensed matter physics or high-energy physics. They are always in the regime of so-called particle plus field. And this is a regime that usually we apply the mathematician to formal asymptotics. If you don't have this regime, you can do nothing about formal asymptotics. And the formal asymptotics, what you're doing probably is not justified. Usually in this regime, you can do some formal asymptotics. And if you won't expect any somehow dynamical law of or say properties of vortices, you probably also need a such regime. You will see better what I'm talking about later. Okay, so this will be more or less the outline of the lectures. Okay. So I will start with static theory. So let me first explain some relevance equations. And probably this talk will be a little bit pure. I will start with actually vortex equation that was first systematically started by Jeff and Tobbs. The book is 8081, which I cannot remember. You miss my thanks, but it's fine. If anyone wants, my thanks is fine, so long as you invite me out for dinner. But anyway, so the equation is very simple. So you have a Lagrangian functional, which depend on two unknown. U is called order parameter, So it's a complex valued function. A in physics is a magnetic potential. Why I should talk about it? Because you talk about already, yeah? Sophia, yesterday, explain all the physics background. Anyway, so I just say it's a Liu 1 form or Liu 1 vector living on R2. And the gradient A of U is defined just simple gradient minus so covariant derivative. This model, of course, it can be viewed as a Yang-Mills-Higgs model with abelian gauge, yeah? Abelian gauge group. So there are two fundamental properties of this functional. First of all, it's gauge invariant. Gauge invariance, I wrote down here, which Sophia mentioned yesterday as well. But second property, which only somehow produced by this problem, here you have one quarter exactly. If you write down as 4 as 2 times epsilon squared, then epsilon had to be squared 2, in other words. This is so-called self-duality, self-dual situation. And in this case, if we decompose the usual gradient, write down in the usual complex notation, means d bar and d, then you can write down the function. Now, if I do a calculation right this morning, this is what comes out. Okay? It's you can write down the functional in the following. The d bar A of U square, so two perfect square, plus a global quantity, which is a topological quantity. This FA is just dA, so it becomes two form. You take the usual contraction with the area form, right, on two. So this is curvature. And the hypothesis for this calculation is Ux has to be asymptotically go to 1 at a little bit fast speed. Usually it's exponential speed for such problem. And the gradient A of U is close to 0 at infinity. And this D is the topological degree of U if you take a large enough circle in the plane at infinity, in other words. So this is a topological number. You prescribe such number, then the functional simply like a two perfect square. Well, all right, this is good. Well, this is good because then the minimum solution you can simply lead off, right? Because the two perfect square and the minimum is two perfect square both zero. And this is called a vortex equation. So it becomes a first order system for A and U. And that is catch, yeah? The self-dual case can reduce to first order system. Non-self-dual case, no. You have to stick with second order problem, second order equation. So this vortex equation, after some calculation in the book of Jeff and Tobbs, can be reduced to a single elliptic equation of the type which I write down here. Now FU is of exponential type. It's very easy to see it, in fact, because you can write down d bar A of U equals 0, write down, say, use gauge invariance as well. But to say, when you d bar of logarithm U will be equals A, and you plug into second equation, then you see the exponential equation will come out, naturally. Except such transformation will not be valid at the vortices, at the zeros, then there will probably a certain bunch of Dirac and with certain degree. But this equation can be solved. And so there's one remark I want to make here. One can prescribe zeros in this problem at arbitrary position and of arbitrary degree, so long as the total topological degree add up coincide with degree at infinity. Okay, so this is self-dual case, and there you can solve it. Now I have little yellow here question, why? Right? Why this is so? And then I have a conclusion here. I say the self-dual case has reached the mathematical structure because they have such simple module space of solutions, right? Because determined by zeros, more or less. But not most likely not to be realistic from physics point of view, at least at the present setting. Why? So this is explained here. Why? This is exactly when you require the Ginzburg-Landau parameter to be equal to square root 2. And if you look at the physics literature, and this is exactly the case, you're dividing superconductor in two types, type 1 and type 2. And in type 2, These vortices are of same degree, very repulsive to each other. So they are force repulsive to each other. They are the force acting on vortices. And in type 1, they tend to attract to each other. Okay, and this is a boarding, sort of borderline case. There's no force between vortices. And this is why you can prescribe arbitrary location and arbitrary degree. Okay, that is, because that is such a critical situation, it is unlikely in real world that it will happen. Agree not, or it's my opinion, yeah? Anyway. But nonetheless, mathematically is most interesting, right? Now I'm going to explain the dimension and the scaling in the functional. The other parameter, dimension 0, is like a usual function. And gradient will be of dimension minus 1. But you look at the form of a gradient, that means magnetic potential has to be of dimension minus 1. dA is of dimension minus 2, because you divide through, take a derivative, like divide through by space once. Okay? So, this is so-called dimension analysis. I hope you're familiar with that. Whenever we do any partial differential equation, the first thing we do is a scaling and the dimension analysis. And then you will, the most difficult thing always try to find a dimensionless estimate, right? And this is also physics too, yeah? And then you have natural scaling for these functionals. Okay, so epsilon is a positive parameter. And the other one keep a dimension not changing for every quantity. So because this is dimension minus 2, integral along the surface, so you have to multiply by minus 2, so you have to multiply epsilon squared to get dimension 0 after integral. And this is dimension 0, and you integral along two-dimensional surface, you got dimension 2, so you have to divide through by two-dimension. Okay, Dirichlet integral, of course, is conformally invariant dimension 0 quantity. Now, you can do very similar situation for so-called vortex equation on a Riemann surface. So here, now, this is a little bit pure side, as I say, but some of you will sit in for next, probably, workshop as well. I just want to say that it's simply part of analysis, yeah? You can somehow apply here. So if L is a complex line bundle, so U in this case will be a section, and A will be a connection, right? And then on the Riemann surface, again you can write down, you have a complex structure nature, and you can write down the functional, and now you have 2 pi times D. D is the degree of this line bundle. Again, it's a global topological quantity whenever you fix line bundle. This is there. So you read off the minimum solution, again, is a vortex equation. Okay, now why you do epsilon here? Now you see the epsilon, use of epsilon. In geometry, you don't care whatever equation you work with, you try to work out something. And so now you put in epsilon, because the second equation has a natural constraint. Because you integral the curvature form on Riemann surface, you will get a degree of this line bundle, and then you have epsilon in front. And the integral on the right side clearly listing half of the surface area, of the volume of the sigma. So you have to certify this constraint. But now I take epsilon small, you can do whatever you like, in other words. Any line bundle, any degree, you can do that. Is it okay? Still Jeff Tops, yeah? In 1980, 20 years ago, we are still in, no? So what happens when epsilon goes to zero? And that was started, actually, in relatively much more recent, 94-95 paper by Hong, Yost, and Struve. And this is really a 2D version of what Tops did for Selby-Witten equation. You probably hear the name Selby-Witten equation. It's a great equation, but you don't have to do a complicated analysis as Simon Donaldson did for Jan Mills, but you get whatever topological conclusion which probably can be found through Jan Mills, you can find through Selby-Witten. So, okay? Anyway, I will talk about this a little bit later as well, but geometrically, really corresponding to L collapse to a flat line bundle. Of course, then you will have isolated zeros, isolated singularities where the curvature concentrate. And corresponding to this order parameter will have isolated zeros. And otherwise, this order parameter will tend to a harmonic map with isolated singularity. So corresponding to top is the harmonic spinner case situation. Very similar, but 2D version of that. Now goes to superconductivity. All right, so we gradually going there. So now we have to restrict ourselves to a bounded domain first. And you have following functional. But now the epsilon is not usually not equal to square root 2. It's called the Ginzburg lambda parameter. The functional, again, is gauge invariant, very the same as before, but no self-duality. So in other words, you consider variational equation associated with this functional had to be second order. So what I'm writing here, this must be early in the morning, yeah? So let me see. There's work along 85, I hope I recall correctly. It's along 85 by Fabrice Bethel and Tristan Riviere, which consider this functional with no external applied field, but they consider the case with certain Dirichlet type boundary condition. Basically, prescribe the supercurlon along the boundary, which physically is probably unrealistic and not even possible to test it, to check it. Yeah, the nature of physical boundary condition, of course, is Neumann boundary condition, just leave free. So in other words, you have a superconductor, but the outside is called an insulator or something, right? You have Neumann boundary condition. So there's a work by Du, Shantou, and myself along the 87, which consider you have small applied field, okay, but I do consider Neumann boundary condition, and I probably should explain a little bit more about it. But more subtle works done by Sylvia a few years ago in her thesis, and then later, Sen also joined work. She talked about yesterday some of it, which is much more subtle because considered high applied field in some sense, in my terminology. Yeah. So in Neumann boundary condition case, if without magnetic field, which is I'm going to talk about in a moment, then it's hardly you can find any minimizer or even stable solution beside of a trivial one. Beside of a trivial one. A trivial one cannot be, right? Epsilon is not zero, so there's no solution basically for Neumann boundary condition case. But when you add a small applied field, it happens that you will have a local minimum and the solution was vortices. That was observed in the work of Du and Lin. That probably is one of the sort of the main contribution of our work, that the applied magnetic field really has the effect of producing vortices, which is expected from physics point of view, of course. Yeah, vortices was produced when you applied in applied field. Otherwise, you mathematically can work with Dirichlet boundary condition, so the boundary condition has non-trivial topology, but it forces you to have non-trivial zeros inside. Why? So, the calculation is somewhat interesting. I just want to show you sort of schematically a simple situation where we have Neumann boundary condition, the domain is simply a ball. So for the simplified Ginzburg lambda function, which I'm going to talk about just in a moment, I have to talk about that, of course, yeah? In other words, without magnetic field or induced magnetic field or nothing about magnetic field, yeah, just a U order parameter. With Dirichlet boundary condition, you can do better. With Neumann boundary condition, for the anomalous energy for the ball, it was one vortices, is simply given by this. It's simply given by this. Okay, so you notice that this functional has local maxima at the origin, right? And otherwise, go to minus infinity at the boundary. So the vortex location clearly is not going to be stable because the stability of vortices were related to the property of this anomalous energy. You will see later, yeah? But with the magnetic field applied, even if it's small, then you will see something like that kind of effect coming, but cannot be too small in order to see vortices. So we become more or less a superposition of two potential. One is the early one. The second one is this function Sophia explained yesterday. But actually, it's a Bayes Laplacian. Bayes Laplacian of Xi, minus Xi equals 0, and Xi equals 1 at the boundary. And the picture is like that. So this produces another potential. If H0 is relatively large, you superpose V2, you will produce a lot of local minimum for the anomalous energy. And therefore, you can produce local minimum for corresponding Hertzberg lambda with Neumann boundary condition. This more or less additive structure will be useful later on. So try to remind me when I discuss the hydrodynamics. You say, well, you said once before that this is useful. Well, where is the use of that? I will be interested in when field has certain random effect or fluctuation to see what happens to the hydrodynamics of these vortices. Okay, if you have additive structure, sort of you, like adding a white noise or adding blowing motion, then to the vortex motion law, then you can derive a very reasonable hydrodynamic limit. But if it's a multiplicative or even more nonlinear structure, then I don't think anybody knows what's happening, right? Even though you can make a guess. As far as I know, I don't know about anything about it, which will be more subtle in some sense. So I'm going to state another theorem. That is a higher dimensional version of what we see in the 2D situation. So this is ND, and you can either work with simplified or work with magnetic field, but with no like a strong applied magnetic field. We cannot do that, yeah? But no applied magnetic field or something. But you see, you fix a domain, so you have a topology to work with at the boundary. So suppose you have a family of local minimizers of, say, simplified Ginzburg lambda with energy at this level given here. Of course, you can prove if you have a Dirichlet boundary condition, usually you can establish such estimate. But very much depends on what kind of hypothesis you're going to make it. For example, in n equals 3 case, the best somehow result is due to Bourguin, Polizzi's, and Mihalnescu. So they asking for the G, I believe, is H1 half boundary condition, but it was not trivial topology here as well, topological singularity. Anyway, in general, so you have to have a singularity to guarantee non-trivial solution anyway, you will see. A typical situation, say, on cylinder, on top is the X of a matrix, X is a planar field, and the bottom is the X of a matrix, so you have two singularity, topological non-trivial, and then the minimum area minimizing current will be simply a geodesic connecting the two points. So, nu epsilon is this normalized measure. It's energy density normalized by this log.
And E
epsilon is just energy density function. Yeah. Thanks. I didn't explain. Yeah. So, it's converging to a measure which is total variation measure of a current. And this is area minimizing curl, called dimension 2, with a boundary given by S. Now, what is S? This is E, this is federal notation, I'm sorry. It's just N minus 3-dimensional curl, which is supported on boundary of omega, which is given by some sort of a topological singularity of a map G. And if you hear Bob Jolas talk, in fact, it's his Jacobian of this map, is this curl. All right? Agree? Yeah. Now, the application, so that is part of the reason why we afterwards write a small article on this Jacobian, but it was boundary value problem, so you see, understand that. Application is this approach is actually interesting, even though it's not necessarily simple proof. It's still messy because the paper is 75 pages. Right? Maybe still somebody can simplify it. It's just mess, I have to say. But I will explain a little bit later. Yeah. But the new proof, it gives a new proof of Federal Fleming's theorem. For example, every integral homology clause can be represented by an alien minimizing integral kernel. And original proof uses compactness closure theorem for integral kernel as well as deformation theorem. Okay, so these are very hard stuff in geometry measure theory. And we can avoid that. We just use very little area comparison, one lambda, which is clearly easier to do. Don't have to somehow involve all this heavy stuff. But over here you might say, well, we just did a core dimension 2 case. So there's a higher core dimensional version. For example, with the Hartenheim surface approach used the p-harmonic map, you know, all these things are very, very similar. All the technical details are very different. All the phenomena, principle, philosophy are same. Yeah. So the result come out the same. And the argument there is so general, you can apply to a lot of cases. But in order to do general core dimension, you need some topological lemmas, which was did in a paper, which supposed to finish 5 years ago, but yeah, it's slow, very, very slow. It's just after a while you're tired, yeah? You're tired of these stuff. So we have to do something else. But anyway, we will finish, yeah? Maybe soon. Higher core dimension case also can use this one of idea introduced by Barbagallo and Matesona. They introduce certain functional, general functional in higher core dimension. They try to do this dynamic, but there's something you have to assume, I believe, again. But for a stationary situation minimizing, just follow their function. You can carry out the same analysis that Tristan and I did in this problem. And then it works, yeah? Geometry music part is so general that it works for all these problems. And then the topological part, you have to work in different problems, slightly different. Uses a little bit intersection homology, Pancalet duality, these type of stuff. But it's elementary regardless, yeah? Interpolator. Anyway. So this is one theorem, this is one application. I thought this is interesting. The another application is in place what Topps did in his work publishing Journal of AMS, the Serbia-Witten invariant implies Kolmogorov invariant. I'm not going to say his algebra part. Algebra part I don't understand at all. I even don't understand what he set up, but I just guess what he might have done in his work. Yeah. But indeed, afterwards, I talked to Tian and I talked to Tristan by recently reading the paper. Indeed, it's what I guessed. And indeed, the situation that he considered is much easier than ours because he has self-dual situation. So here's a situation, you have four manifold, four-dimensional, say, Keller manifold, you have a complex line bundle, basically, on this, of Ginzburg-Lano type. You take a such scaling limit, and then you look at the collapsing set, the energy concentration set. He showed it's a holomorphic curve. Yeah? Maybe it was branch points, several branch points, but it's a holomorphic curve. And then, that is how, from Selby-Witten, you have a module space of solution which defines topology. You pass to the limit through continuum process and find a holomorphic curve which defines Kolmogorov invariant in such manifold. And this is how he connected. That is like connecting the critical point of the anomalous energy and the Ginzburg-Lano functional in 2D situation. Very similar. But you need, of course, other way around as well. But this direction is just proving this concentration set is a holomorphic curve, more or less. Okay? So in every homology class, you have to do something like that. But apparently, Topps' proof has a mistake. Yes. I cannot do, but Tristan can do. Yeah. These things are much heavier for Ginzburg-Lando within this one, within these. Yeah. Self-dual situations analysis-wise is reduced to first-order system. Relatively easy. Also, energy is finite. One theorem was always energy finite. The other one is infinite energy concentration. It's a very different situation. Here, he only needs a small energy regularity, so the harmonic map theory, you know, people know small energy regularity means. But there, we need a so-called eta complex lemma or quantization, which when I discuss the last part, the higher dimensional case, I may have a chance to discuss that. But I say, Topps first proof definite has a mistake, which I know very well. Then afterwards, he has 10 pages fixed up. But apparently, still not quite. Yeah, I was told. But We can verify, you can verify next week with Tian and the Tops at the same time, yeah?
Tops
proof. That paper, the proof still contains a gap, apparently, yeah. But now, why I say that our analysis implies his? So, we just look at a four-dimensional manifold, complex manifold. I'm just going to say the proof, yeah? So it's recorded, so everybody, I cannot lie, yeah? So how proof goes? So you have a four-dimensional complex manifold. You have this energy concentration. Forget self-duality. Just do as stupid as I was. Just do non-self-dual situation. Work with second order. You find the energy concentration set had to be area minimizing curl in this particular homology class. It really depends on the problem you start with, right? So you find the area minimizing surfaces in four-dimensional manifold. Now, if you want to use what is already being known in geometry music, such surfaces is classical, means it's everywhere smooth except finite number of branch points. Okay, but you only find the alien minimizing surface. There's nothing to do with holomorphic curve. So why should it be holomorphic? Now, here you use self-duality. The self-dual equation, the first equation you remember is d bar A of U equals zero. That means the concentration set basically is zero set of almost holomorphic function, perturbation of holomorphic function. Right? You use this basically to show you take a limit. At the limit, the tangent has to be holomorphic. Okay? Now suppose I'm lucky this area minimizing surface happens to be smooth everywhere, then I just use the well-known theorem of Cordiala, which says any two-dimensional surface on any two-dimensional smooth surface, if you have a complex, you have a surface, you have a complex structure there, and you have a tangent, yeah, complex tangent, at every point tangent is complex, then such structure is integrable, therefore you find a holomorphic curve. For example, now I have a finite number of branch points. This is not too difficult to take care at this stage. So that basically is the proof recorded. All right. All right. But uses a lot of heavy stuff, right? As you say, uses the regularity of alien minimizing current. I believe you probably can simply work with first order to do something better, like use pseudo holomorphic curve, maybe test the limit or something better. So this result was first shown by Tristan in 1985 when n equals 3, where you have area minimizing current simply geodesics, line segments in Euclidean space. That is what he worked out. The proof is very long. It's 100 pages something, published in electronic journal in Europe somewhere. You can find, for sure, from his publication list. But it's a very long proof. And however, this shocks me. Tristan always shocks me a lot of time, because this is a problem which I look at for a while. I find it's technically very challenging. I have worked out a lot of simple cases with proof which is quite straightforward. But in general, I don't have it. I did one thing, and I look at his paper. There's one simple lemma, which in 3D turns out to be quite simple to prove. And with this lemma, the list of arguments, which I know is quite simple. So this is how 96 we start to do together, collaborate. And so in our paper, it contains a simple proof which are 14 pages. It's there, it's one of the sections containing the proof of 3D case. Because in this case, the somehow idea or everything is very clear and can be laid down explicitly. Because the geometric music part is very trivial in this part. Yeah, and the topology is very trivial as well. Stationary case, I just going to say a few words, but I probably going to explain later. Really because it relates to the proof of this theorem. Now, when we prove this theorem in higher dimension with lemma, which I mentioned, it's very crucial. In higher dimension, actually, we have to prove such similar lemma. And in order to prove such lemma, we by that time, at the very beginning, I believe it's 96, 97, yeah, when I was in Chicago. So we have a proof which uses the Schoen-Uhlenbeck construction, like in harmonic map, Schoen-Uhlenbeck construction, section 4 of their first paper on harmonic map, if you remember that. I can precisely refer to you. But the proof is by energy comparison, because it uses minimizing property. Yeah, it's believable how why this should be true if you look at it this way. But then, after finishing it, then somehow come up another proof, which we felt very excited, which works also for stationary. So So by then, I reluctant to get away Shuanglongbeck construction because after all, we worked for a while. I said, publish first, then station maybe leave later. But then maybe say publish anyway. Unfortunately, this llama first proof contained a mistake. So there's the error time about this llama, and we put in the original proof. But it was discovered much later, it was 1999. While I was looking at other problems, then I realized that the proof has a gap in the proof. Some borderline estimate does not go through. And then we send an email immediately to editor and say, well, we have to amend our proof and try to change it. But it was already pressed. So I have to immediately send in the older proof again. Error time right after the paper. But anyway, its proof is there anyway. It's very simple error time still there. But then that did make us very desperate. In September, when Tristan came to Coulomb, that make us very desperate to try to looking for proof for stationary case. And that is very, very hard, I think. And worked for 3 months for that. By middle of December, collected the problem where we only been able to do for 3D, which is a combination of Fibini monotonicity sort of dimension reduction, even though I believe one can do high dimension, but it's so complex, which we stop at 3D, say, let's do 3D first. Use Lorentz space estimate, interpolation. That is first, but it's very rewarding afterwards, because when you get through this point, you at the same time wrote another two more papers, use Lorentz space. Because you see, the Michael's talk, the first talk, use Lorentz space. And we applied this actually immediately then in 1999 to harmonic map. That is one issue which puzzled me for like 6-8 years at least, yeah? When I finished first paper on harmonic map, on stationary harmonic map, there's one issue which I also want to go through. It's very similar. But then we got this Lorentz space as exactly right. You have to combine with dimension reduction and rectifiability, somehow reduce dimension, because Lorentz space in this case only can apply to slides, with two-dimensional slides. So it works in 3D. But then, half a year or a year later, BBO, Battelle, Blizzis, Orlandi, find a more direct look at our proof. He said, well, this step you don't have to do so complicated Lorentz space interpolating for this problem after all. For harmonic map, but still so far is only proof. I don't believe there will be other their method will work or anything, because nothing like that. But they say, well, just interpolating between L1 and L infinity. It's very, very funny situation. I will explain later, but it works because there's a monotonist form, we don't use one observation, and they got it. So proved ND as well. But the general theory we carry out is whenever you have this llama, in stationary case, the energy concentration theta will be always stationary variable. It's like a stationary minimum surface. This is a generalized version of that. Now, you cannot get a curl because we are thinking about measure and orientation. Cannot work with Jacobian. I believe in stationary case, Jacobi probably not work because only catch topological part of singularity. And energy could, you have several sheets come together or something, you destroy. But it's a stationary variable, you catch total energy. But dynamic, I think your idea should work. Yeah. So, give you a hard problem, but I think it should work for dynamic situation. Bob knows, right? So, oh boy, I mean, I'm okay, but. So now I have to go back to Bible, BBH. it's really become Bible in the on this subject. So that is a book published by Bertel Blizzis Allen in 94, and late, of course, there's some improvement in meantime by Struber, Delpino, Filmer, and all the people. So we consider a simplified model. Okay? Now, history does not go this way, but I organize my material more logically way because it's nice to start with a vortex equation and put the whole picture, yeah, in perspective, in pure mass as well. But so, that is the functional, and now it's Dirichlet boundary condition. So U equals G on the boundary is a complex valued function. Several cases they prove in their book, The first case is a simple case, where U is smooth map to S1. Yeah, because U almost have to be 1. If U not map to S1, then you will develop a boundary layer. That will be another complication, but it's not addressed here, of course, or in any other late papers, actually. Always avoid that. Smooth of degree 0, then you have a smooth convergence to a smooth harmonic map. Nothing happened. But converging only near the boundary is only C1 alpha, not even C1, 1, or C2. Clearly not. Clearly cannot be C2. But the most interesting case is when you have vortices. The problem in this case, the problem will have finite energy. So everything you have a compactness naturally built in, and it's fine. In second case, you have degree non-zero. And because degree non-zero, you cannot have a harmonic map which map the circle S1, say, to S1 with degree non-zero, and you will have a finite energy extension to a map from domain, say, disk to S1. That will not be possible. So singularity has to develop, in other words, in this case. And then up to subsequence, later on, you always should understand this convergence always up to subsequence. And then sometimes the whole family converging because you prove the limit is unique in certain way, then whole family will converge. But in most time, you always got the first subsequence converging to a harmonic map. So this H, phase function H here, is a harmonic function in the domain. And the boundary condition of H is determined through this condition here. And with D, exactly D singularity all of, say, degree 1. So vortices of a higher degree never appear in minimizing in this problem. I addressed yesterday as well, people asking you. So I say again, yeah? It's okay? So this is one theorem. It's not so easy to prove, yeah? After all, take a, not Bible, but a book, yeah? Second, combined with one result obtained sometime earlier, or some of the time, but they're not written in the book, but I believe, but or not. I'm not sure if they write in the book or not, this second statement. Exactly D zeros. I always miss something in the book. That is, Ham sometimes criticizes me. Say, no, this estimate you can find in the book. It's actually there. But, you know, how can you read a whole book, right, from page to page? So you always miss something. But they spend a lot of time, of course, work on this problem, clearly, yeah? They started about a year and a half earlier than me on this problem. And this is why I have to do something different. exactly D zeros, D distinct zeros. Patty is here, right? Agree with that? Yeah, exactly D zeros. That is you guys prove. Because you just need to localize each singularity with boundary data, very nice diffeomorphism, so you got one zero at each small disk along the zero. And each of degree 1. Moreover, the limiting point, the d-duple point, has to be a global minimizing point, minimum point, for so-called anomalous energy. Now, this energy you should view as a simple particle interaction energy. You simply put the electrons, with positive charge, and the boundary has certain electro charge, somehow more continuum charge. And then you have this potential interacting, So these points cannot get close to each other because they're repulsive, but cannot go to boundary. Boundary has force to push in, so they reach an equilibrium position. They reach minimum somewhere inside. Okay, so this is the most interesting result, I think, part of the proof is you single out this anomalous energy. Yeah? This anomalization is always a beautiful word in physics, yeah? And the third one is you have all these converging as a Lada measure. These are positive, so converging in sense of Lada measure. The last one, the Jacobian result, absorbed value, the converging will be in sense of distribution sense. That is even true, you will see later on in the more general setting, even without minimizing property. But in minimizing case, actually you can prove with absorbed value also converging too. The Jacobian's L1 was proved by, I forget to write down this name, Mehonescu, Kant, you remember Mehonescu, Kant. They have something about Jacobian estimate. Yeah, I certainly remember. Yeah. So it has something to do with the work by Mehonescu. I'm not sure it's joined or not, but it's safe to write a couple names here. But actually, it follows in some way is from Bauman, Chen, Phillips, Lizard, plus a classical theorem of hands. He had hands. If you remember, he had hands how he solved the isometric embedding problem, reduces to an elliptic system of a harmonic map type, and he shows if a boundary is diffeomorphism, in some sense, yeah, and then the inside has to be diffeomorphism for 2x2 elliptic system for minimizing situation. That is very beautiful proof. Yeah, and then through that, with this original idea, Hans Levy, of course, is famous. Yeah, you have a gradient of a harmonic function. Yeah, if we give the homeomorphism, the Jacobi has to be never zero anywhere. Yes, but this is more quantitative, generalized of Hans Levy. This is very classical, 1960s. Hans Levy, 1930-something, the first paper about this factor. And then he has Arnold's paper in 1960-something, which, however, showed the result is true, some of the result true in 3D, but not true in 4D, which is much harder. Yeah. And the energy has such asymptotic expansion. I'm long out of time. Well, we have 4 lectures, so I always can do that. But I thought it would be nice just give, first of all, because otherwise it starts dynamically, you don't know what I'm talking about. I mean, at least say something about the anomalous energy or something. So, very, very nice, a little old one. Now, it was Mehonescu showed epsilon to the beta, which is non-trivial, yeah? Basically, estimate what's the difference of A1 epsilon, A2 epsilon, so on, to A1, A2, the limiting point, the distance, in terms of epsilon to the power, use analytic, very, very analytic of this one, very, very somehow delicate estimate. That estimate is needed in order to establish local uniqueness in the work of Van Bakker and Tristan. Yeah, Tristan de Beer. Now, so that is this estimate. Yeah, you can spend a whole life and keep going. I mean, But then, you know, you have a stationary case. Either you assume this energy at this point or omega is star-shaped. This is in BBH, show the similar result. In this case, you have, again, an anomalous energy, but the degree of singularity, you might have a higher degree of singularity. Even though nobody construct an example beside a trivial one, radial symmetry with certain fold of degree. Beside this type, and nobody construct really a non-trivial higher degree zeros and go to limit of this type. Or you have several zeros come together. But there are a lot of spike guys here, spike liars, and they can do probably. It's a similar situation for stationary. I think I should stop. I probably will say a few more words about statics, and then I will go to next topic in next lecture. Well, thank you.
Any questions?
Yeah. I think if he wants to use this theorem, yes, then his proof should go through. Somehow he tried so hard to avoid this theorem, and then that is where he made all the mistakes, I believe. At the first proof, that clearly contained a lot of gaps, because he just proved like a density of points at a certain condition. You know, we work with geometric music, we know that density of points does not make any sense musicologically. But then the second proof is slightly better. But apparently, I have to say, I'm not sure. I have not looked at the paper or personally checked out. There's really a gap. But I was told by Tristan and Tian, they look at this, they find there's still some problems. That will straight out next week for sure.
Any more questions?